What about outside a trial setting, though, adding in pertuzumab or considering a post-adjuvant neratinib in the patient with who's got neoadjuvant treatment with significant residual disease?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I think if you have significant residual disease after the neoadjuvant component and you've only given trastuzumab, you could make an argument for adding in pertuzumab during the adjuvant phase. You could also, you know, make an argument for extended HER2 targeting using neratinib in that fashion. My own take from the AFFINITY and the ExteNET trials is that if you're going to use, you know, pertuzumab, you know, I use it typically in hormone receptor negative with node positive disease because those are the subsets that appear to be deriving the greatest benefit from pertuzumab. Conversely, neratinib, you know, had, to my mind, a slightly mystifying finding that it seemed to be more effective in hormone receptor positive. So I think, you know, in one sense, it might be mystifying, but it's also helpful in that the hormone receptor positive group, if you're going to use neratinib and that extended sequential use of HER2 targeting, that would be the group I do it in, is also the higher risk hormone receptor positive, HER2 positive.
And that's what we're seeing when we survey investigators. They seem pretty proactive about considering it with ER positive, HER2 positive disease. Any speculations why you would see a difference? Do you think there could be an interaction with hormone therapy, or what do you think is going on?
You know, it's possible that there's an interaction with the ongoing endocrine therapy because, to be honest, all of the other studies that have been done really, you know, this was counterintuitive to me and to many people because even other studies of small molecule inhibitors like lapatinib did not found the opposite interaction. And so neratinib, by virtue of being irreversible, that's not a compelling biologic reason itself. So one has to wonder if it's something about the, you know, either the nature of the patients that were accrued or the nature of the concurrent other therapies. To be honest, I don't think anyone really knows, but we have a large phase 3 trial that has, you know, positive results to deal with.
Do you think that in some way it could be explained by the trial design or who got in the trial, or does it look like a real finding?
Well, it certainly looks like a real finding in the sense that it's a well-designed, well-powered study with a real result. You know, the design, again, if we go back to HERA, it's not simply a duration question because HERA looked at 2 years versus 1 year and did not find this. So, and then in the sequential, and it's not simply a sequential question because similarly, the sequential use in ALTO did not seem to provide much of a benefit, although it wasn't the same duration. So, you know, I don't think it's just duration, although you could say that the combination of it being 2 years plus the fact that there was a change from a monoclonal-based therapy to a small molecule-based therapy at a time when perhaps resistance is evolving, you know, it might be some combination of those things. But I think it's not a hypothesis-generating study because it was powered to be a definitive study, and I think we should consider it as such. You know, it has a modest effect and it appears to be in the hormone receptor positive group, which is a little bit perplexing, but I think that's something for us to explore further, but not to ignore the findings.
Have you yourself actually recommended neratinib in that post-adjuvant setting since it was approved? Have you actually done it?
I have recommended it. I haven't actually done it yet.